Right now, we want to take you to an event that happened this morning at about 8:30. One of the newsmaker sessions that they have here at NAFB was on trade. It was titled Trade in Trump 2.0. And part of the panel was Greg Dowd. He is the National Milk Producers Federation. I believe he was part of the USDA at one time. That name sounds familiar. Andrew Brandt, U.S. Grains and Bioproducts Council. Joe Shealy, U.S. Meat Export Federation. And Janet Fritz is mentioned. She is the chairperson for the U.S. Soybean Export Council. And they had a discussion and basically talked about the benefits or detractors of the policy of the Trump administration, what people thought. Here's a portion of that conversation from this morning.
The issue of trade, ladies and gentlemen on the panel, have the tariffs worked? Have they had a beneficial impact for American farmers? The president says yes, says the times are going to be better. Markets sometimes say things differently. Many farm groups say things differently. Let's get your perspective from each of your organizations. So, who wants to go first?
I'll go first. Andrew Brandt with the U.S. Grains and Bioproducts Council now. We just changed our name in August. I think the question of have the tariffs worked, I think it's too early to tell. If we look at what President Trump and his advisors say is the goal of these tariffs, they'll kind of mention two key problems they're trying to solve constantly. They want to drive down the trade deficit, and they want to bring back American manufacturing jobs to the U.S. If we have a trade deficit, that means you're making the widget somewhere else. It ought to be made in the Midwest or the industrial heartland through Ohio and Pennsylvania. I think it's just too early to tell whether the new tariffs have worked. We've seen the 232 and 301 tariffs from the first term, Trump's first term on steel, aluminum, as well as the 301 tariffs against China, which were just kind of a general rebalancing tariff. I don't think we're going to know if tariffs have worked. Now, I know for certain crops, we represent sorghum, and I know another commodity represented on this panel might have something to say, but in the short term, for like sorghum, their exports have collapsed in the near term. Does that mean 5 years from now we won't deem this a success? I hope we do. But I would say it's just too early to tell whether some of the pain we've seen for certain crops, not all, because corn is doing quite well, but like sorghum, who we represent, they've had a tough summer. So I think it's just going to take a couple years, and I would say probably like beyond the Trump term, I'm talking 5 to 7, 8 years to see if the factories start to be built. So that's how I see it.
I would agree with that. There's pretty early to tell, especially with the industries that are targeted for revitalizing manufacturing, steel, lumber, industries like that, whether they truly ramp up domestic production as a result of the tariffs remains to be seen. I guess I would put a little different direction on the question, and from our perspective, when Tariff Day or Liberation Day or whatever it was called arrived, our big concern is will it lead to retaliation? And in the case of red meat exports, it's been kind of a good news, bad news situation. On one hand, retaliation has been pretty much limited to China. We had some retaliatory measures imposed by Canada, but those were repealed around Labor Day. So retaliation has been pretty much limited to China, but those retaliatory measures, those countermeasures, have been very impactful, especially for the beef industry. So there's been quite a lot of impact there, but on the other hand, we are thankful and grateful that our other trading partners have shown a lot of restraint and have engaged in negotiations rather than just turning immediately to retaliation. So our take on that is that we are hopeful that trade negotiations will lead to increased access for U.S. beef, pork, and lamb. And so far we are dealing with countermeasures, but mostly from China. We need those to be resolved as quickly as possible, but we do see some hope for expanding markets as a result of, not necessarily as a result of the tariffs, but the fact that the tariffs have gotten some trading partners to the negotiating table.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak on behalf of the farmer in the room. And, you know, I think what's already been said is very applicable equally to soy. Yes, we have some very distinct concerns, obviously, soy being a number one export opportunity and our largest market being China. There's obviously some very big concerns amongst the farmers out there, especially those in the soybean industry. However, we constantly are looking for that differentiation opportunity. And having more countries around the globe come to the table to have open conversations to increase their utilization of U.S. soy has been a tremendous opportunity for us in the midst of these trade negotiations. So I think where there's still concern, there's obviously still a great deal of opportunity available, and we'll continue to have those conversations and look to expand market opportunities for U.S. soy.
I'm going to start by giving you all a homework assignment. It is the place you have to start this conversation. And it's an interview that Tucker Carlson did with my old boss, Robert Lighthizer, about 7 or 8 months ago. And you all need to listen to that to kind of understand what the strategy is here. Because Bob unpacks it. He does it in his book. It's very interesting about what is a U.S. industrial policy for the first time. And we have to understand that tariffs are just one, Bob would argue, and I would argue as well, one minor piece of what it takes to make the U.S. competitive. You have to have a competitive tax policy. You have to have a competitive regulatory policy, monetary policy, fiscal policy. All of these things packaged together to make the U.S. competitive in the world. And when it comes to tariffs, I would probably put tariffs in this whole conversation into four different buckets. And so let's think through these buckets a little bit here. The tariffs that don't make any sense are on things like fertilizer. And interestingly enough, you saw recently where the administration has made a change with regard to tariffs on fertilizer. When it comes to importing potash from Canada, yeah, the U.S. farmer is going to pay whatever that tariff is. It's very different than the discussion with China. The second bucket would be with the tariffs relative to reciprocity. Why are we putting a tariff on Switzerland? Well, because they charge a 1,200% tariff on U.S. beef. Can we get that to match up a little bit? Son of a gun, we've sat down and have a conversation with Switzerland to say, hey, look, we got to even this thing out. The third bucket is very simply leverage. You put the tariff on as leverage in a way to get things better than they were before. And to me, all the deals that have been done in Southeast Asia, here are the frameworks that we're talking about in Southeast Asia. To me, that has been, you know, I've been in Washington doing trade stuff for 33 years. For 33 years, we've wanted some of these deals with Southeast Asia. Have we seen all the details yet and know what they are? No, but I'm very familiar with what we're doing here, and I think we've moved the needle pretty significantly here in agriculture with Southeast Asia. We've had, I know in the dairy industry, we've had a 3-5% hickey for many, many years into Malaysia and the Philippines, especially Indonesia, just enough to kind of keep us out of there. And so if you can get rid of that, that makes a huge difference for us. So the fourth bucket would be China, which is something very different entirely because you're dealing with a part of the world that does not play fair. They don't make decisions based upon supply and demand and profit and loss in a monthly profit and loss statement. It's a very different deal. And follow-up, what I think we need to talk about here, folks, is how different the world of agricultural trade is since the day I walked out of USTR 5 years ago. The world is very different, in particular with regard to the BRICS. Brazil, Russia, India, Iran, China, South Africa. Very different. It is shocking to me to know that Brazilian soybean production is up by 40% the size of the U.S. crop since I left USTR. That's mind-bending. That we have that much of a different world in ag trade than we had just a few years ago.
So that was just a little bit of the sight and sounds. Unfortunately, which is weird because it's a bunch of farm broadcasters, but some of the microphones they were using were not the best, but you definitely could get the point there. And if you're just joining us, you're wondering what the heck that was a newsmaker discussion that we had basically the first session of the day. It was entitled Trade in Trump 2.0, and Greg Dowd, Andrew Brandt, Joe Sheely, and also Jenna Fritz from the different organizations, Milk Producers, U.S. Grains, U.S. Meat, and U.S. Soybean Export Council, giving their opinions and just how the tariffs have worked and so far at least trade. And again, I think that part of the statement there was incomplete. I mean, we're just too far or too early into the ball game for that to give a final answer quite yet.